My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast podcast. Today, I have my old co-host from the morning show, Paul Gallant, who's been doing radio in Seattle for the last couple of years. So he does a weekly show with Pete Carroll. He's been following Russell Wilson and the rest of that squad very closely. Had to get his opinion on what the hell is going on with Russell Wilson, how it relates to Deshaun Watson. And we also play a game of who's more disgruntled. If you like the show, please leave a review. Send me an email if you want any feedback to be heard. Seth.Payne@Entercom.com. And enjoy the show. We're recording already. I'm just going to go. I don't do well with beginning, so I just start recording from the very beginning. And I texted you earlier because you're in the same position that we all in Houston here were.
I know.
In.
What
yeah. With disgruntled quarterbacks.
I thought I was free. And here I am. The team made the playoffs last year. They win the NFC West. And I am now looking at a drama, Seth, between the head coach who has never had a losing record with Russell Wilson and a quarterback in Russ who has asked for a lot, to be quite honest, over the last calendar year.
Yeah, that's okay. This is what I need on the inside scoop here is how much of a right does Russell Wilson have to be disgruntled? Because the first thing that bothered me a little bit when he brought up the offensive line on the Dan Patrick show a couple weeks ago, is that, yeah, they haven't done a great job of retaining offensive linemen, but Russell Wilson is responsible for a lot of the hits that he takes, right?
Yeah. He's responsible for, I would say, a third to half of them. And if you really want to get a feel for how lost Russ looked at one point this year, go back to the game where they lost to the New York Giants, and it's highlighted in that Athletic piece that just came out on Thursday morning. If you add up the amount of times that Russ scrambled, that he was sacked and threw the football, there's this idea that the Seahawks offense got conservative in that game. The split was like 55 passes to 15 handoffs.
Yeah, they actually did a good job in that article. I think the perception was that all of a sudden, after those two games where Russell Wilson had 7 turnovers, that all of a sudden the Seahawks just battened the hatches and turned into like the 1964 Green Bay Packers and ran the ball all the time, where they actually were still extremely aggressive on first down, right? That index they use on how early and often you're passing, they passed the ball pretty aggressively, much more than average. So they didn't completely go away from letting Russ cook. He just wasn't cooking that well.
He wasn't cooking that well. And that's not all on him. I mean, the offensive line, if you watch them against the Rams, they were just overwhelmed. They had no answer for Aaron Donald. And I mean, you've played that position before. There are certain guys who are just unstoppable.
I've played the Aaron Donald position. Yes, yeah. I've been that guy before. People have said, hey, who's Aaron Donald to remind you of? pretty much Seth Payne. He's like a
Aaron Donald's a poor man's Seth Payne in that aspect. But I mean, Aaron Donald's throwing guys to the side even when he's injured in that game. And then also Leonard Floyd, for whatever reason, has like 7 sacks against the Seahawks this season. So, I mean, the offensive line could have been better, no doubt about it. And also, you know, they have a new offensive coordinator now. Brian Schottenheimer, he had some good moments this year. And I remember, I think I told you and a bunch of and Landry and a bunch of other guys at 6'10", wow, Brian Schottenheimer's actually had a pretty good season.
Yeah, you did.
I know. I'm sorry. A month happened and things changed. And I think we ran out of magic with Brian Schottenheimer. And I think the big problem was, Seth, if you take a look at the way that Russ was going through his progressions, Russ got to a point where it looked like he was looking deep first and then looking intermediate and then short and then nothing was happening. They need to have somebody, and that's the hope with Shane Waldron. Good luck, man. I mean, I don't know if it's quite David Culley, but you're coming into this situation. He's going to have to be better finding and opening things up over the intermediate and over the short range as my cat jumps up on my couch in the background. And that's going to be tough. It feels like a lot of pressure is on Shane Waldron because I don't know, Seth, what they do this offseason to really make the team better. You have a second round pick in the back of the second round. You don't have a first or a third, and you don't have a whole lot of cap space either.
Well, that's what I wonder about Russell Wilson is I understand these to break it down for the listeners that don't know. There was a rumor or there was a story, the tweet this morning that Russell Wilson had requested a trade and there were 4 teams that he wanted to be traded to. His agent later clarified it and said, hey, we haven't requested a trade, but these are the 4 teams that we'd be amenable to a trade if it happened. It was the Bears, the Saints, the Raiders, and the Cowboys. Of those 4 teams, the Saints are the only one that make immediate sense to me. And this does relate to not getting sacked as much. Drew Brees is a shorter quarterback whose coach, especially in recent years, has committed to the offensive line, has always committed to paying running backs, has always tried to do things to help the quarterback out, not necessarily in by paying receivers, but by paying all those guys in front of them. But what is it about the Bears, the Raiders, and the Cowboys that you think he likes?
The Bears, I have no idea. You want to work with Matt Nagy? Okay.
Yeah.
See how that goes. The Cowboys, is it a prestige thing? Is it a profile thing? Because if there's one word I don't want to hear again this offseason, and I'm sure I'm going to because it's only been a month, it's the word legacy, and Russ has brought up legacy a lot. So, you know, you put the star on the side of your helmet. I don't know that it still has the same cachet that it used to, but I mean, there is a show business that's going on in Dallas. The Saints are an interesting one, but how do they create the cap space to put Russell's contract on the books? Aren't they like $100 million in
they're
debt?
Ridiculously over the,
Right. So the Saints make sense because, you know, one of the things, Seth, that has been brought up a lot after the fact and specifically with the Super Bowl has been that Russ watched the game and he sees Tom Brady go to Tampa Bay and the Bucs are listening to Tom Brady. But that's just a really inaccurate depiction of what took place. If you look at the Bucs now and where they were at the beginning of last year and where they are now, the Bucs were always this trendy, oh, you know what, if they get it all together pick for a long period of time because they are loaded with talent.
Right.
And now with Brady aboard, you see just how good all this blue chip talent is, whether it's on defense with Avante David or Devin White or, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaquille Barrett, Vita Vea, and Ndamukong Suh is just hanging out there. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski. Shoot, even put Leonard Fournette in there if you really want to. I mean, that team's loaded with talent. So Russ maybe goes to the Saints. Okay, that's another team that's loaded with talent. And I think Russ is hoping that the Seahawks are going to be like, all right, well, we'll get you all the talent that you possibly need. But it's really hard to find yourself walking to a blue chip situation without many blue chips being given up.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that maybe Deshaun Watson's going to start finding in Houston is that, oh, the teams that are willing to the teams that have good, like for especially this year, a high first round pick or cap space or assets to give for Deshaun Watson aren't necessarily going to be the best teams. The better teams and the good situations already have their guys that they need. And I guess in laying it out that way, is there a perception in Seattle, maybe more so than it is in Houston right now? Because in Houston, I think people, for the most part, like 80 to 85% every time we pull, side with Deshaun. They see that the front office has completely botched the Texans roster. Where with the Seahawks, it's not so clear that the front office has botched anything other than the way that Russell Wilson wants the team to be constructed. Do you sense a perception in Seattle that it's more about Russell just wanting to jump ship or just jump onto a better situation as much as different than perhaps Deshaun's situation?
Yeah, to me, and I'm not speaking for everybody, but to me, he's coming off as a diva. Yeah. And he wants everything. He wants the world. And if you want to go through the list of demands that he's made over the last calendar year, at the Pro Bowl, he wanted a superstar. By the way, they got him a superstar. They traded 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams. I feel like Russ is sort of ignoring the whole fact that there's a defense that's involved with, you know, winning championships. That's what won the Bucs the Super Bowl.
He's got a freak of nature as a wide receiver, too.
That too. That helps out as well.
It's like if he looks like almost... If he hadn't looked like that since the age he was 13, you'd almost think, like, well, there's no way this guy isn't on PEDs. Yeah. So they got him that guy.
Yeah. They got him in the second round.
Metcalf, who's he upset that they only used a second round pick on a freak of nature?
It's a good question. I don't know. Look, in his defense, I can't walk down the line and say, like, Russ is incorrect in who they've gone after on the offensive line. Like, they have done a poor job. Outside of the Dwayne Brown trade and the Damian Lewis in the third round out of LSU, who they got, who stepped in at right guard and did pretty well. And actually Brandon Shell, all things considered, did pretty well. Like, for the most part, the last decade, the Seahawks on the offensive line, it's been a lot of misses. Jermaine Ifedi in the first round. You go all the way back to before Russell Wilson. There are some other guys that they brought in the first round on the offensive line. I think James Carpenter didn't work out so well either. So, I mean, they've tried, they've swung and missed a lot. And Russ's take is essentially, all right, well, be better, which is, of course, for anyone who is on Twitter, the most annoying thing that you can have as a response to your take. Ooh, be better. Shut up. You know, that's how I always
feel when I see that. Yeah, if somebody says you're better than that, I can kind of take that. I almost take that as a compliment and somebody wants to help me.
Yeah.
But yeah, be better is rough.
Be better is an annoying one. So as far as the split, as far as the Q rating, it's closer to 50-50. You go online with the militant nerds.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of people that are like, oh, well, Pete's holding Russ back. They're also going to say running backs don't matter, which is ironic here, given that the only time that the Seahawks have had good running backs is when their offense has been good, whether it's Chris Carson or it's Marshawn Lynch before. They forget about 2017 when the Seahawks didn't have any running backs to speak of. And Russell Wilson, I think, had like the most rushing touchdowns on the team with one or something like that. It's insane. You got to go back and look at the numbers.
You know what? Honestly, that's where the problem with a lot of the stats is the same thing's going on now with, hey, defensive backs are more important than pass rushers. It's all individual. There's the average, and then there's what matters in a specific situation. With the way Pete Carroll likes to run his offense and the way he's just in this athletic piece, they really highlight just how crazily old school he is. For being such a flaky weirdo conspiracy theory nut, he's also he might as well have a crew cut. You know, he's very old school in his football philosophy.
He is, and there's a part of me that loves it. And I'll be honest, like, there's a part of me too that, since I talk with Pete Carroll every single Monday after the games, and we get to talk with him for 30 minutes, and he answers questions that are even difficult ones well, and he usually just says, "Paul, oh, you worry too much, Paul." And I'm like, "All right, Paul." I mean, yeah, I do. But I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I think I'm a little biased towards Pete, but I also understand that without Russ, this team isn't relevant. And
okay, what about? Part. What was the one thing that came up in that article a couple times was the perception that Pete Carroll coddles Russell Wilson. Have you sensed that?
That's the funny thing. You know, now I don't know if you've seen on Twitter today between, I think it was first Jermaine Kearse, who tweeted out a GIF, which is, I think, the GIF that someone would put out, GIF, whatever, of when you're seeing something and you're just like,
yeah,
you know, oh yeah, I know this, but I'm not going to say anything. So Jermaine Kearse put something out there. Doug Baldwin likes the tweet. Richard Sherman retweets it with a emoji zipper on his mouth. Before I moved here, you know, when I was there with you, Seth, in Houston, we read these articles about the Seahawks, and we're like, why is everyone mad about Russ? It doesn't make any sense. Now that I'm here, I get it. I'm starting to get it.
Well, especially the defensive players, right? Those veteran defensive players. You always kind of sense that they just wanted a quarterback who's more of a guy, like, or a dog, or like just a normal. Yeah.
And so I understand that side of it and this coddled side of things. I don't know that it exists necessarily anymore. And in Russell's mind, it clearly doesn't, because Russell will be leaking these things or openly saying these things all of a sudden the way that he has this year. There is a part of me, and this is maybe a little bit, you know, we talked about Pete with conspiracy theories. This might be a little conspiracy theorist of me, but it does feel like Russ is trying to paint the way that the season ended in a way that reflects more positively on him.
That reflects more positively on Russell Wilson. Right. Yeah. And as there were a couple of quotes in that article too that said this is all about PR. This is all about Russell Wilson trying to be sure.
Point.
Well, and I wonder about that with Deshaun. As much as the front office has botched things, I think that this whole Jack Easterby stuff is just weird as hell, as you've been able to tell from afar. And everything,
I've read it, and I'm just amazed that this is what it's become. Remember when Bill O'Brien was the problem?
Well, it's amazing, because sometimes we have to remind ourselves and others that, hey, by the way, O'Brien really screwed it up too. It was both these guys. But I think that there's look, obviously there's dysfunction within the organization, but if I'm Deshaun Watson, at least part of it's got to be looking around and realizing, whoa, this is for real. Like me having my best passing season ever didn't do anything. We went 4-12. I didn't even realize this was possible. And then you look at the Texans don't have a first or a second round pick. They've got no cap space. The future is not bright. He's got to be thinking about his legacy a little bit and what the hell am I going to do? But it's still, I feel like that's more adequate reason for alarm, because this roster in Houston is just not nearly what the roster in Seattle is. It's just,
right.
Yeah. So it's that part of it, the PR side of it, I found fascinating when they started talking about his agency, the CAA, the agency that represents him and Sierra, and how this whole little blitz that he did at the end of the season, and also that he did before he got his contract last year, 2 years ago, sounds so coordinated. It just sounds a little too pat and perfect, right? That he goes on the Dan Patrick show, these other rumors start leaking. Like whereas Deshaun, it feels very scattershot, and you get the sense that maybe some reporters are just talking to buddies of his at times. This Russell Wilson thing seems like a coordinated attack.
It is a coordinated attack, in my honest opinion. And I mean, you know, Mark Rogers retweets the story, or excuse me, Mark Rogers didn't retweet it, but Adam Schefter tweets out, I guess in response to it, like, there are a couple of teams that were mentioned in the trade, and Mark Rogers tells Adam Schefter, Mark Rogers is Russell's agent. For those who don't know, he has a baseball background, so he's a little bit more of a poo, 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 you know, puncher, I would say, than more agents out there. And the relationship between the Seahawks and Russ were very strained during the last contract negotiations. Seemed like everything was fine. But Rogers, it's funny, tells Schefter, Russ didn't ask for a trade. And you know, that part of the story probably came from the Seahawks side of things, that the Seahawks were approached with a couple of teams that he could go to. Russ didn't ask for a trade. But if he did ask for a trade, here's Dallas, here's Chicago. Like, he's really quick with that. And I found that part of it interesting. So your gauge on this is, I think, correct, in that it has felt really coordinated. And it's funny with Russ, or excuse me, with Deshaun, Deshaun doesn't need to coordinate anything. You know, like, it's
he's already got public sentiment on his side.
Right. He's everybody, got it all on side.
Yeah, everybody realizes that this, I mean, every step along the way, for the past 2 years, we've realized ever since O'Brien and Easterby started making moves and roster decisions, you've seen all of it. You followed it along the way. All right, I want to play a quick game with you.
Cool.
It's called Who's More Disgruntled? Kind of slash who's got a right to be more disgruntled between Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. So we'll start off with the basics. Who has actually demanded or requested a trade? That, as far as we know, is just Deshaun Watson at this
Correct.
Point, as it stands on Thursday, February 25th. Although for a long time, I kept saying, hey, everybody, Deshaun hasn't officially requested a trade. And then it came out, hey, by the way, yeah, it was like 3 weeks ago. He already requested a trade. So, all right, screw yourself. So we don't know. Who has publicly named desired locations?
That is Russell Wilson.
That's Russell Wilson.
That game. Right.
All kinds of rumors about where Deshaun wants to go, or where he would waive the no trade clause. But Russell Wilson did the old, like, it's almost like you play that game with your wife where you get a pass, you know, like the one celebrity. If you were to say, like, okay, that's great, but I want four. Give me four. It's four. All fun and games until you demand four instead of one. And maybe a couple of them are actually coworkers of yours.
So, but for Deshaun, there's two at the very least that we think we know of, right? It's the Jets and Dolphins.
Dolphins, and the only person that's actually put their name on anything is Kareem Jackson, who said that in conversation Denver. With Deshaun had said, sure, I'd be interested in going to Denver. I get the sense that all of these quote unquote favorites have been just when people have asked him, like, hey, what do you think about the Jets? Cool. I'd like the Jets. Fine. I like Robert Saleh. But that is one thing, by the way. Robert Saleh was one of the coaches, and I'm very confident in this. I was told that Deshaun really liked Robert Saleh, and that's been reported, but I feel very confident in all of that. So the fact the Texans didn't even interview Robert Saleh, that was kind of a big deal. Let's see. Who has tweeted cryptic rap lyrics? I haven't kept up with Russell Westbrook's social media because it's nauseating, but he hasn't done anything cryptic.
Did you see the one that he put out one today? So yeah, Deshaun, it's funny because they're all rap lyrics, but they're all well-picked rap lyrics. And right. I think I even asked him, I was like, so who is this from? And he actually responded. And I was like, oh, you coy son of a gun. With Russ today, he posted a video of him working out. I believe, hang on a second. I'm going to look this up on my Twitter. Scooba doop doo wop, shibbity dop doop doop, scoop doobity doop. All fuel. And it's him like on one leg doing all sorts of interesting workouts with his legs.
Oh, yeah.
And I retweeted it saying spilling gasoline is an inefficient way to create fuel because there's lots of gasoline that he has been spilling. Like, so I guess he's creating fuel with the fuel that's clever.
That's a little too clever for social media. You're not going to get it. You're not going to get nearly as many likes and retweets on that as you feel like you deserve. That's when you suffer for your art. Sometimes you craft the perfect joke and you're like, oh, this is only going to be received by 1-2% of my audience.
Why am I not more stupid?
That's
the most awesome humble brag I've ever done.
Deshaun, this is the one I had to Google this to be sure. Cause that's what you have to do with Deshaun. Anytime he never gives any attribution to the rap lyrics, you know, you got to Google it first and find out if it's Future or somebody else. But today he tweeted, loyalty is everything. Don't you ever forget it, ever in all caps.
I saw that today.
Yeah. And so his quarterback's coach, Quincy Avery, was tweeting about Russell Wilson a couple times today. So this is still cryptic. Mm-hmm. You don't know if Deshaun's talking about himself or talking about Russell Wilson or my personal theory, which is a complete guess, is that at some point he felt like Cal McNair showed loyalty to somebody other than Deshaun, and that's when all bets were off. Who knows? Let's see.
Question. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. So was Deshaun upset when O'Brien got canned? That's a
really good question. And I think that there's more of a possibility than people probably would want to think or would think at first.
Right. I think everyone from afar is like, well, Brian's awful. So of course he wanted him gone.
Yeah. I think this is the year that honestly, Deshaun kind of really internalized and naturalized Bill O'Brien's offense. All the things that O'Brien wants a quarterback to do, which is really, really hard stuff. All these option routes, being able to change everything and change the plays, change the protection at the line of scrimmage. They put a lot on the quarterback's plate mentally. And there's just no way anybody, no matter how smart they are, is going to pick it up and naturalize that in just a couple of years. This was the year that it really took hold for Deshaun Watson. And I think he likes the scheme. I think he likes the system. And that's one of the reasons the Texans kept Tim Kelly. I think that if there had to be a battle between Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby, a lot of guys, myself included, I mean, the day they fired Bill O'Brien, I just kept waiting for Jack Easterby to be fired. I kept waiting for that shoe to drop. I don't know. I don't know what goes on with all the soap opera and all of those other things. I do think that Deshaun came from Clemson, man. Like, think about the difference in culture between Clemson and then Bill O'Brien / Jack Easterby / whatever the hell's going on. Yeah. So I don't know how much of that was Bill O'Brien per se. Maybe the environment itself was something that Deshaun Watson didn't like. But I also know that regardless of how he felt when Bill O'Brien was fired, man, it really sounds like it degenerated after that.
Yeah.
And when nobody was truly in control, you have an interim head coach, you've got an interim GM who's not qualified, that I think whatever negative feelings people had about the organization as players, it just got amplified.
Yeah, I could see that. You think Easterby would fit in with the Clemson culture too?
I think this is the problem with Easterby. Easterby shouldn't have any authority or control. I think when he was in New England, I think he'd fit in great in Clemson as long as he didn't have authority or control. His role is to be a guy that you can talk to, you can counsel, maybe he helps you. You know, he's great. He's a great consultant type of guy. And it sounds like every step he's been at along the way, including whether it's college or when he was an intern with the Jaguars, all that stuff, he kind of bounces around a lot and gives advice, you know, give you some motivational slogans and saying, but that's a whole lot different than actually making decisions and having control and power. And the big mistake the Texans made was they gave this motivational speaker the keys to the car. And it was just really, really weird.
The selected clips that I have seen of him online have been painful. I know, though, that they are selected. And if you put a Seinfeld laugh track or the Seinfeld theme underneath it, like I believe Jacob Payne, a Syracuse grad, put up online, made me laugh very hard. But there's another part of me that's like, he can't possibly be this incompetent, you know?
This is the problem. This is a complete like, hey, you can realize your dreams. Hey, you got to think outside the box and you can make it happen. That kind of guy. And his whole strategy seems to be, because you've seen the clips, it's not like he's good in front of a crowd. It's not like he's somebody that can stand up in front of a room and just win the day, you know. But what he's really good at is creating individual relationships with
one-on-ones.
And it is so crazy, Paul. Every time we ask any of these guys whom he's affected, whether it's Bill O'Brien, Nick Caserio, or Cal McNair, when we ask him, hey, what is Jack Easterby good at? What does he do in the organization? They can't answer it. It's bizarre. They'll say like, okay, what is Jack Easterby good at? Boy, he's just good at so many things, and he's just got a great way of relating to people. But he's helped me out through a bunch of stuff. Okay, Vanessa Richardson here in Houston, the TV anchor, asked specifically, could you please tell us specifically what Jack Easterby does?
Good job, Vanessa.
No answer. No answer. It was crazy. She did a really good job with it. All right, I got to let you go because you got a whole bunch of stuff. Real quick, though, I wanted to get at least a couple health questions out of you.
Oh, cool.
I try to wrap each one of these up with something with either like mental or physical health.
Oh, gosh.
How many carbs did you have yesterday?
As far as overall grams, I did have a Rice Krispie treat yesterday.
Oh, so you're currently on a low carb cycle.
Very low carb cycle.
Very low carb. Okay.
Yeah. So actually, check that. What I've been doing recently is, and you know me, I'm sort of a health nut. I haven't worked out a whole lot in the last week, and I'm mad at myself for that because I don't know. I'm trying to balance work life and I don't know, me life, but I haven't done a very good job with it. And I've done even worse stuff over the last week when I've been more focused on it. But every morning I over the weekend, I cook these protein pancakes. So those have, I would say, like probably like 14 grams of carbs in them. I have about a third of a cup of oatmeal with blueberries every morning as well. And then if you add in the Rice Krispie treat, I would probably say, I don't know. I've had enough carbs where like I'm not feeling like I am just downing a bunch of like a loaf of bread or anything like that.
Right, right. Just like a healthy low amount. Like low, but not super low, but also not.
Really, not okay. Yeah, I'm not ketoing or anything.
This is what I've done in the last few weeks. Is I've just said, you know what? I'm going back to like actual athlete carb standards. And I've been taking in like 400, 500 grams a day. And I feel phenomenal.
Yeah, dude,
it's like
good.
Every time I exercise, I'm just like, oh, this is awesome. Like,
you know, I'm not going to lie. I used to have a lot of bread.
Yeah.
I miss bread. My big problem with carbs is that I can't do just a little.
You can't regulate. That's the problem.
Yeah, because I mean, for those who have seen me on social media, like if you give me a box of cookies, I'll eat it and I'll eat it by the time I get home.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like 5 minutes in a car, I'll just wolf them all down and then I'll puke them.
The biggest thing that low carb does for you, or I mean, it does lots of things for you. And honestly, I'm not anti-low carb or pro-low carb. Everybody's different. Everybody's individual. Especially for people like football players. there's people that there's a lot of evidence that being on low carb can perhaps stave off dementia or neurological issues. Well, certainly just having your blood sugar in control, and you don't have to go low carb to do that, but low carb is like a really efficient way to get your blood sugar into control. I can't even remember what I was going to ask you. The other question I wanted to ask you was, are you doing any group fitness? Have you gotten back into that at all? I don't know what the restrictions are.
Well, I played basketball last Saturday. I actually have inserts in my shoes now.
Orthotics?
Yeah.
Middle-aged old man. No, that makes a big difference. They're good.
It's my knees still kind of hurt. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I haven't worked out. So what I had been doing was my gym is open. I live across the street from a gym. Again, it's an awesome gym. And what they have is you have to schedule in advance, like 45 minute sessions. You can do double sessions now, which is like cool.
You're allowed to go into the gym for 45 minutes or
And they clean up afterwards. It's really fancy. This is a super nice gym, and it's great that it's right across the street. But that's the reason I'm doing it. Cause obviously being a cheapo, I generally would look for the cheaper option. But, so I go there and I try to go 5 to 6 days a week for the weightliftings and do it. I've been bad the last week. I haven't gone. But I also try, and again, bad last week, I've been bad. I was really good for a month, but my knees are hurting. I've been trying to run 14 miles a week. In addition to doing the working out, lifting stuff. But there's a part of me that is now trying to figure out, okay, so the work side of things, you're always going to be a psychopath and overprepare. The off the working out side of things, you're always going to be a psychopath because you think that you can still have a six pack and that's going to apparently get you the hottest wife of all time.
And
you need to find balance in between where you actually have some sort of a social life. So finding a social life during the week is actually my priority right now, but I am working out.
Are you doing, you've always been good with time management and everything. I would tell you to be better about time management, but that would be very hypocritical of me.
You know what though? The worst part of my time management is the managing the amount of time that I sleep. So I don't nap anymore because I find when I get up from a nap, I'm groggy and grumpy.
Yeah.
The problem is finding a way to, you know this as doing the morning show. The trick is trying to find a time when you can go to bed. And I've been trying this week, like the biggest priority, as I make a million priorities, has been if I can get to bed on time, then I will wake up on time and everything in between will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But actually going to bed on time is really hard, especially when the Seahawks keep on doing this stuff.
I know. In the business we're in too, a lot of stuff happens at 11 p.m. So it's hard to wake up and get ready for it. You know what I'll do? I'll send you a spreadsheet I've been working on. I read the book Habits, and a lot of my listeners know this. But this book Habits by Jim Clear.
I'll buy it. You make good book recommendations.
It's made a big difference in my life. So I keep a spreadsheet now of like daily habits. So I've got 7 things I need to do every day. And I feel like those put me on the right path, both in the short term and the long term. James Clear is his name.
James Clear. Got it.
Habits by James Clear. And it rehashes a lot of other things. I don't know, all the different habit books that are out there. There's some really famous ones. But what people have said, this book's more actionable. It doesn't just give you a lot of theories and motivational stuff. It's actually he says, look, motivation is so overrated. It's really about all the things you do when you don't feel motivated. Yeah. And it gives you kind of a plan for how to create these habits. Like an actual spreadsheet for how to create the habits, how to reward yourself every time you do it. So you create doing something for, if you do something for 2 minutes a day, like you can check it off the box because it's all about creating that habit. And like if you ran for 5 minutes or worked out for 5 minutes, you check off the box. Because over time what happens is, and this is what's happened to me now, I started off just kind of on a whim thinking, all right, I'm gonna ride my stationary bike every morning for a week. And I kind of started grilling it into my spreadsheet. I can't not ride my bike in the morning anymore. Like I'll be up at 4 a.m. and feel just like absolute ass because I had to, like, same thing. I couldn't go to bed early or something. And like by 4:30 a.m., it's like something takes over. I just walk into the garage and start riding the bike. It's completely automatic.
And you do it just for 30 minutes. There are never days where you're like, nah, Pass. Hard pass on this.
No, I've not, because it's always, I always have the option. If I did 5 minutes, I would check it off the box. But once you do 5 minutes, it almost always just, it turns into 30, you know?
Yeah. My plan, and I did this once this week. It's, I do a set amount of pushups on these like little pushup things. And I like try to do like four sets. I've been over ambitious as always, but like four sets of 20 on these like little pushup things. I have a pull up bar and a chin up bar, which I was using during the pandemic because we didn't have any gyms. And I do like pull ups and I do chin ups. And then I have this ab machine too. So I'm trying to do all that in the morning, because I figure if I get the blood flowing, at the very least, I'll be less of a grumpy early on in the day. Oh wait, I'm not allowed to swear anymore, by the way. That's always,
oh, you know. Why, yeah. Did you get caught swearing?
No, it's just different company, different standards.
Oh, that's right.
You know what, I almost went the whole time without it, so
you want me to bleep that out?
You could, that'd be great.
Okay, I'll figure it out. I'm learning skill. I've got editing skills kind of now. I'm learning stuff. All right, buddy, I'll let you get going. I know you got it, but I was going through this a couple weeks ago with Deshaun. You're going to be on 18 different cities in the next 2 days.
I know. Kansas City already, and I think Las Vegas later today. We'll see how that goes.
All right, buddy. Thanks, man.
Always have a good one. I love you, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, bud.
Peace.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.